This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
Haiti's parliament stopped sitting on January the 12th when the terms of all the deputies in the lower house, as well as 10 of the country's senators, expired. There have been no parliamentary elections in the country since 2010. The current crisis was brought about by the refusal of President Michel Martelly and the Senate to agree on a law for administering elections. While blaming the crisis on a group of six opposition senators, Martelly is the clear beneficiary, and the U.S. government has come down on his side. Joining us to discuss the current situation in Haiti is Amy Willens. Her most recent book, Farewell Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti, won the 2013 National Book Award. And Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen spoke with Amy earlier this week. He began by asking her why Martelly and the Haitian Senate could not come to an agreement.
Well, Haiti has a constitution that is in part modeled on our own, and they developed that constitution after the fall of the Duvalier dictatorship in 1987 was when the constitution was written. And it has very intense checks and balances, and everybody took full use of this to sort of stall the Haitian government. But really, I think what the whole crisis came down to was a conflict over who was going to run the next elections and who was going to have full power over those elections. And I think the senators and the legislators wanted to stall that, the deputies wanted to forestall Martelly's being in total charge of that, and Martelly wanted to be in charge of appointing the Electoral Council and be in total control of election manipulation, and that's where they sort of came to blows, and the government stopped functioning, and now he's left ruling by decree.
And what about the United States? What has been their role in all of this?
Well, the U.S. government really wants to make sure that elections go forward without instability and unrest. They want to make sure that coming out of those elections is a president they can do business with who's not, you know, insurrectionary or difficult or revolutionary or creating a bad climate for business in Haiti. So they want to just make sure that moves forward smoothly. And that's how, in my opinion, that's how Martelly came to power. The United States has been mixed up in Haitian governments and Haitian elections for a very long time.
And how have people reacted to the dissolution of parliament? How have Haitian citizens reacted to this dissolution?
Well, I mean, broadly speaking, there have been some big demonstrations against Martelly. I think there's a lot of discontent. You know, look, Haiti, in spite of supposedly all these good intentions and all the money that came in after the earthquake, also since the fall of the worst dictatorship Haiti's ever had, the country hasn't advanced for the people in the country. This is the problem. And so people have come out into the streets to say, what, we're going back to dictatorship now with Martelly? Now everything's, you know, everything's finished and he's ruling by decree. That's not to say that other presidents haven't ruled by decree also in the interim since the fall of the Duvalier dictatorship. There have been others for precisely these reasons.
Now all of this has been taking place in the backdrop of the earthquake, which occurred 5 years ago. And I think January was the fifth anniversary of the terrible
That's
earthquake
right.
that struck Haiti. How has Haiti recovered from this catastrophe?
Well, as you know, there was a huge outpouring of international sympathy after the earthquake, both on the part of, you know, just the average person all around the world, and also international organizations and foreign governments, and many, many foreign governments pledged huge amounts of money. It was a very complicated effort. First of all, there was relief and relief is kind of immediate. That's when you pull people out of rubble and fix broken legs and perform amputations and try to save people's lives. But then there's reconstruction, and that's been much more complicated. A lot of money has been stolen. A lot of money has gone where it shouldn't have gone, and just simply a lot of the money that was promised never really came into Haiti. So I think it's been a very complicated time for Haiti, in which Haitians didn't really get to participate in decisions that were being made about their recovery. I mean, it's a little bit like Katrina, Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. Somewhat the same kind of thing happened. Not enough popular empowerment and too many decisions being taken by people who have no idea what they're doing.
And in terms of those people who are making those decisions, I think you refer to something that you call the crisis caravan. Can you tell me what
the
is the crisis caravan?
I didn't invent this term, but it's a wonderful term, which is about these people who are part of international relief and reconstruction. And it's like a profession now. And the Clinton Global Initiative is part of this. All sorts of international organizations are part of this. And I talk about them in my book, Farewell Fred Voodoo, where, you know, someone will say, oh, yeah, I met him after the earthquake in China, and then we were going out during the tsunami in Japan, and then we broke up after the earthquake in Haiti. And that's what these people are like. They travel from one crisis to the next crisis in a kind of caravan, and in some ways they're very professional, but in terms of knowing the culture and the society in which they are functioning, they don't know much.
You also talk about why Haiti can't be fixed or fixed in this manner. Why can't Haiti be fixed?
Well, it's just really, to me, it's the terms that you're using right there in that sentence. Why can't Haiti be fixed? Haiti can't be fixed because you can't come from the outside and fix a country. Haiti has to fix itself. But the problem is that Haiti still is where Haiti always was, which is 500 miles off the coast of the United States. And therefore, it is an object of interest and of, I mean, it was a bulwark against Cuba. And that's one reason we maintained our kind of bizarre interest in it. But that's one of Haiti's problems, is that outsiders are always trying to fix it.
Well, you mentioned American involvement, and it's just its proximity to the United States, and that raises the question of globalization. And Haiti is part of the global economy. How has Haiti fared in this global economy?
Haiti has always been a globalized country, and the slave trade was probably the first real global economy, the slave economy in the Americas, where three continents were complicit in that trade. But for now, what's happened to Haiti with globalization is a country that used to feed itself in terms of rice, which is a great Haitian staple, grown in Haiti, eaten by Haitians, the main starch, carbohydrate of Haiti. So it was feeding itself, even in the 1950s, with its own rice. But now it is the second biggest importer of United States rice in the world. And it only produces 20% of its own rice. And this is because of American policies. We dumped our subsidized rice into the Haitian market. That's part of globalization. And then it undersold Haitian rice, and that killed Haitian rice production and basically forced Haiti and Haitians into a position of dependency. And there are so many examples like this.
One of the justifications behind free trade is that the best products from each country will rise to the top and benefit that country and also its trading partners. Yet Haiti has some great fruit and coffee. But are these products being exported in a way that you might expect?
Haiti has used to have sugar production, rice production. It used to have coffee production, mango production, avocado production. And it has all those things still, but in in smallholder quantities. It doesn't have agribusiness. So immediately, if you don't have a huge Haitian agribusiness, you're not competing with developed nations that have agribusiness. But if you allow agribusiness to move into Haiti, it's not going to be Haitian agribusiness. So it's economically very complicated. I'm not an economist. All I can tell you is that it has not been a fruitful community for Haiti to be a part of the global economy. It has not been working for Haiti. And what really happens with Haiti, as with Bangladesh and other places, is it's a rush to the bottom. You know, if your workers in your garment factory in Guatemala have a strike, you just close your shop and you open it up in Haiti or you open it up in Bangladesh, where you can get cheaper workers who won't be allowed to strike against you.
You end a recent blog post with a quotation that if you want to get it done, do it yourself. Do you mean that Haitians need to distance themselves from that global economy that's not really benefiting them?
You know, obviously all these decisions are decisions that Haitians have to make with a democratically elected parliament and president and municipal officials. These are decisions for the Haitian people to be allowed to make when they're allowed to have their own election. But yeah, I mean, one of the things we saw in Haiti after the earthquake was that there were a lot of rubble removal, big yellow trucks. But there was an awful lot of hand-to-hand communal Haitian person-by-person removal of rubble also in these teams that were like the African Kombit that used to work in the Haitian countryside, these groups of people who get together and fix their neighborhoods themselves. That's how a lot of rubble was removed in Haiti. And I just see that as one of the exemplary ways in which Haitians know how to work and still know how to work. But of course, over time, if you're in the global economy for long enough, your generations forget those traditions. And then you are, you know, just a sad person hoping that the global economy will somehow be receptive to you. And that doesn't happen. But on the other hand, I don't want to say to my Haitian friends, oh, you should just be a rice-cultivating peasant. You know, that doesn't seem a fair attitude for someone from the developed world to have to someone who lives in Haiti. Why shouldn't they be a computer expert or a banker or whatever? So, you know, I want the country to develop, but I think they have to choose their own road.
And that was Amy Willens speaking with Red Eye earlier this week. Amy is the author of Farewell, Fred Voodoo, A Letter from Haiti, which won the 2013 National Book Award. And you could read more about Haiti at Amy's blog, which is amywillens.com.